Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to introduce you to comedian and writer Noah Miller. After a career of working on boats and flying helicopters for the Coast Guard, he made the natural transition to stand-up and hasn't looked back. In a short time, he's performed in some of the country's best clubs, including Gotham NYC, Caroline's on Broadway, and the DC Improv, alongside comedians such as John Oliver, Nikki Glaser, and Jeff Ross. His writing portfolio includes half-hour pilots to features, and his inaugural script, Sunset Oaks, made it to the semifinals of the 2021 Screencraft Comedy Competition. And his script, The Found, was a top five finalist at the 2022 Austin Film Festival. Welcome to the show, Noah. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you, Dawn. I appreciate it. And hello, laughers.
Yes, we love our laughers. They're an amazing community that is growing leaps and bounds, and we're thankful for each and every one of you laughers. So this is a treat to have Noah on here. He is actually based out of New York City, and he's coming to and he's in his tiny little apartment. He's surviving, and he's coming to Harrisonburg in February to perform in the X2 comedy series at Court Square Theater. And I'm really excited to talk with you today, Noah. So my first question is to help the laughers get to know you better, since you'll be coming all the way from the Big Apple. And that question is that where you were born and raised, in New York City?
Not even close. Now I've lived in New York about 4 months. I've lived here less than most other places I've ever been to. I was born technically in Philadelphia, but my parents moved when I was like 3 weeks old. So I grew up in Iowa City, Iowa, for the most part. Until I was about 14. That's where my humble roots really begin. And then ever since then, like once we moved when I was 14, I don't think I've lived in one place for more than 4 years since then. So I spent some time in West Virginia and then Connecticut, San Diego, a couple places in Florida, DC, and now New York. So I'm sampling every part of the country at this point, just seeing which one I like best. I like you said, I'm in my tiny apartment here. I can basically touch all four walls at once. So I'm excited to come down and have a little space when I do this show.
I bet cleaning takes about, 5 seconds?
There's just not that much to do. So it's great.
I love that you grew up in the Midwest. I lived for about 7 years in Lansing, Michigan. So I don't know. When we get to the geography in the Midwest.
Yeah, we have to get a globe.
I just want to say my age is showing to give myself a little grace. But it is, the Midwest is a little bit different, and I didn't know that about you growing up there. So what is your, a couple of fond memories about growing up in Iowa? Because it's
so funny. Everybody, when you tell them you're from Iowa, they're like, what do you do in Iowa? And it's like, all right, I get that. If you're like maybe a rock climber or a surfer, you can ask that question. But mostly you do what you do. You do everywhere. You watch Netflix and you and you go to bars. That's pretty much it. Oh, and then if you're in Iowa City, you go tailgate the Hawkeye games on Saturday. That's the big that's a fun thing to do there. So
okay,
but they're all about the Hawkeye.
But listen to me, Noah. You said you were there till age 14, so you're out in the bars at age 14.
Well, that's a good point. That's a general Iowan activity. Me at 14, I was up. I still have some family there, so I'll go visit every now. So that those memories are from later. Growing up, though, yeah, it's just like just the people, you know. Those were all my like first friends and everything in Iowa. So yeah, just like a lot of fond memories going camping. It's really funny. I learned to ski in Iowa, and it's, you're correct if you think it's a very flat state, but they do have a ski slope there.
And, wow, that made it easy.
That made it easy. Yeah, you go down the hill about 20 seconds. It's perfect. But yeah, no, a lot of very fit, just nice people and good corn. You know, that's a good part of it.
Good corn. Now, did you do any cow tipping? I understand that.
I never did cow. People in Iowa respect cows too much to tip them. Their importance to the agriculture. No, didn't do that. I guess maybe I didn't have the full experience. I don't know.
You're fun already. Speaking of fun, when you filled out your X2 comedy intake form, we asked for a fun fact, and you put the fact that you have no middle name. So what is up with that?
That is, it's more the story behind that that's fun. I'm the youngest of five kids, and we went to get my learner's permit when I was 14. In Iowa, you get it when you're 14 because they want you to learn how to drive tractors. That's true, actually. I want you to get it. My whole life up to that point, I was Noah Christopher Milner. That's what my name was because that's what they told me it was. And then I go to get my permit and I give my birth certificate and my social security card. And they say, hey, you don't have a middle name listed on here. And I ask my parents about it. And they're like, oh, we just forgot. So I think I was just, you know, like the fifth kid. They're like, this is too many already. And they think they just get a little absent-minded at that point and just didn't put it on there. So legally, I do not have one. But yeah, like my siblings always tease me, like, if you're the youngest, you're like, oh, you're spoiled, you know, you got everything. It's like, but you guys got full names. So that was at least nice for them, right?
You know what I'm loving about that? I've been married 23 years now. Now, I just had one kid, but I'm also the oldest of seven children. So this family dynamic is not foreign to me.
Yeah.
It's large family. So what I want to do, I wish your parents were on right now, because I want to ask them about the conversation of how they just put Christopher in there and told you that. And then when the rubber met the road, they confessed.
Yeah. I remember it being very nonchalant. They're like, well, I mean, it's still your name. It's like, well, not on like legal documents.
Mom.
Yeah. Like a birth certificate, whatever. Doesn't matter.
That is really fun. The other very interesting thing to me about you that stands out is that you are an 11-year veteran of the Coast Guard. So fascinating to me. I looked up some info on the Coast Guard and I saw that the acceptance rate at the U.S. Coast Guard Academy is a whopping 14.2%. That means every 100 applicants out of that, only 14 are admitted. I have to confess that I have not given the Coast Guard enough credit. And I will publicly announce this to the world right now. You are welcome. I did not realize joining was so extremely selective. What inspired you to join and pursue that career originally?
I appreciate that. The big event, I think, that like really got the Coast Guard a lot of press when I was looking into it was Hurricane Katrina. And I think that was 2005. And I mean, big, like terrible event, but it got so much press. And all you saw during that time was just like, you know, Coast Guard helicopters flying over and picking up people from rooftops and stuff like that. And that was my first exposure to it. Cause I was in West Virginia at that time. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't near the coast. And I think a lot of people are kind of just don't ever have any exposure to them. And that was the first I'd seen of it. And I kind of was like, that looks like a cool job. And my brother, he's a naval aviator. He was kind of getting me interested in aviation. And he's like, listen, you can't pay for this. So the best way to do it is to have a like service do it for you, go through their training program. And so that's those two things kind of coincided. And so when I was like a junior, maybe sophomore in high school, I started seriously looking into going that route. And yeah, eventually got picked up for it. And then 11 years later, yeah, spent my time there. So
gallivanting around the country, it sounds like.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Once you get accepted to the Coast Guard, your journey actually begins with basic training, which sounds pretty tough. Now, I want to know from you, was it tougher than you expected it to be?
So there, I don't want to get too in the weeds. There's a couple pathways. So I did go to the Coast Guard Academy. Like that, there is there's another route, like basic training, that's in Cape May, New Jersey. We also training at we did this in New London, Connecticut, where I went through. And I won't compare myself, like the Cape May experience, I think is much harder. We have our own thing. But then for my path, it was also college. So I had like this indoctrination summer. And that's hard. But then it's like 4 years of college too. And they're doing, you know, you're doing training, you're going on summers to different cutters, and you're doing all this Coast Guard stuff at the same time. And it's like challenging academically. So more than anything, it's not like the push-ups are hard. Oh, it's like this run, this physical challenge. It's like this years long grind of like, I had to stick this out for a long time. That's something I didn't really think about, is like the mental aspect of it. Like 4 years just going through this, and like any college is difficult in that sense, but that is, that certainly starts to wear on you after a little bit. And then you're like, what was I worried about? Like running for it. You know what I mean? Like this is way harder doing this. So, yeah. That was a surprising challenge part to me.
Wow. Yeah. Sometimes it sounds like you're like, what am I doing with my life?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people like go another way, and not even to say that's bad, but like, yeah, I think at the end of it, like, I don't know, you lose like 30% of the people that start, or 40%, something like that. So it's challenging. Yeah.
Not nothing. No, something in there you said was unfamiliar to me. So it may be unfamiliar to a lot of laughers too. And you can correct me if I said the terminology wrong, but you said you said you were going to different cutters. Is that? I don't know what that means.
Sorry. Yeah, you're totally right. I don't know why they call them this, but the Coast Guard ships that you see for... just to be fun and different, we call them cutters they're just boats. That's
okay. All right. See, I wasn't crazy. I'm crazy, but
I should know that too. And I don't usually call them that. I'm too wrapped up in Coast Guard lingo, I think. Because like we're the only people that use that word. And I should know it for a general audience, but too wrapped up in the Coast Guard lingo. That's all it is. It's a fancy word for boats that are more than like 65 feet long, something like that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you did it though, because we learned something new. And
there you go.
And maybe there's a bit in there or a skit in there somewhere. You know? Comedy gold right there, I think. Anyway, you worked on the boats. The cutters, and you flew helicopters, which I think is pretty cool, especially the flying helicopters part. Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. Now, do you get to pick what you want to work on in the Coast Guard and do in the Coast Guard, or is it they assign you the task that you're going to do? How does this work?
That's funny. the military in general is very famous for assigning you, and that is no exception in the Coast Guard. You do get a say a little bit, Don. You get like you can put in your preferences, but they can also just ignore those entirely. it's a little bit of both. A little of it depends on your performance. A lot of it, surprisingly, just depends on luck. Like if there's something available at the time when you're being assigned, then you might get it. But there's very high performers that just the job they want isn't even open. So it's like, well, sorry, you got to go somewhere else. For me, I actually wanted to go to flight school right away for my first assignment. And I couldn't, or I didn't get accepted to it. They sent me to a boat. I didn't get accepted into flight school. And I was a little bit bummed about that at first, but it turned out to be a very fun tour as well. So you kind of you know the odds when you go in. And if you are if you can maintain a positive attitude, you're going to have at least a fun experience no matter where you go to.
So you wanted
to... I sound like a recruiter now.
You do, kind of.
I should just say, from my experience, I had a good time when I did get my first pick and when I didn't get my what I wanted to. So
yeah, by keeping a good attitude. Did you want to fly? You wanted to fly the helicopters.
I did. Yeah. No, that's why I joined initially. That was my whole goal, was to get into aviation.
Oh, that's great. Now, was that easier to learn than you thought, or more difficult to learn than you thought?
That's a great question. It's like the monkey skills of flying are surprisingly easy. Like you could learn to safely fly, at least as far as like takeoffs and landings, in an afternoon or a few days. I don't know. I'm not going to make the declaration. Don't go and try to.
You can just learn it, okay, Laffers. You can just learn it.
Don't go and jump in a plane. Like I said, the monkey skills of it come very easily. But there's a mountain of just manuals and regulations and weather. You basically have to become a meteorologist. Oh, and then pilot speak is just another language. So that is the real challenge. And that's something I never really even considered, but it's just all the studying and everything that goes into it. It's truly a mountain of stuff that you have to learn alongside just the flying part, which I think everyone just is like, oh yeah, you're moving the stick around.
Yeah. So easy. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal. So there's like a training process that takes you through the actual flying skills as well as the manual. So it's a certification that you go through. And how long is that process before they say, Noah Miller can fly helicopters? We feel good about this.
I don't think they ever even said they felt good about it, but they did let me at some point. That's a 2-year process. In the Coast Guard, we piggyback off the Naval Flight School, which is in Pensacola, Florida. And you know, we're not big enough to have one of our own. So we use the Navy. And it's 2 years, give or take a few months. And, I went in like 2013, I think, is when I started there, and popped down in 2015. And even after you finish like 2 years of training, they're still like, all right, you got to do some more schools. Once you get out back into the Coast Guard, you're slowly broken into the airframe that they want you to fly, essentially.
The airframe they want you to fly. What does that mean?
There's like a couple choices. There's like, in the Coast Guard, I mean, there's literally a couple choices for helicopters. There's, I don't want to throw more Coast Guard lingo around, but there's two different helicopters we have. And then there's, for the fixed wing side, I think there's like like normal lineup plans, there's like four choices, I want to say. And I, once again, it's like, you can have a preference, but they're ultimately going to tell you. I ended up flying the bigger one, the 60 Sikorsky. It's like what, it's the same helicopter that every service has, in their stock. So it's a very common one. But yeah, so that's another part where you have a couple choices, and I got, to fly the 60 out of, Clearwater, Florida. It's the Coast Guard base down there.
The big helicopter. So they did declare that Noah Miller can do this.
Exactly.
After all, that's a pretty incredible thing. Was there any hairy times for you flying a helicopter? You're like, oh my God, tell my wife I loved her. You know what I mean?
the only time I was legitimately scared in a helicopter was because of weather. Like, you never want to mess with weather. And we were flying over the Bahamas at night, and it's a situation where, like, you're not up with any air traffic control, so nobody really knows exactly where you are, and you're not getting any help with navigation or anything like that. And the weather's coming in, it's starting to get worse and worse. And there's lightning like in front of us that we're kind of going around.
Oh
like,
my if you gosh.
Get, yeah. If you get struck by lightning in a helicopter, the results could be bad all the way to really bad. So yeah, it was one of those situations where when I finally saw the runway we were going to, I was just like, oh, like I had never been that happy to see one. Yeah, you don't want to mess with weather at night. That was the only time. But for the most part, didn't have any really squirrely moments, thankfully. And I'm not sad I missed out on anything too extreme.
Yeah, knock on wood in your apartment, it's not far.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So you did, what kind of missions were you on, search and rescue then in the Coast Guard?
Yeah. You do, especially in that area, like the Florida and the Bahamas area, you do search and rescue. We did like hurricane operations, counter drug, counter migrants. That's for the most part it. And we had like a very busy, like 2017 was like just like this insane year. And I was down there. That's when hurricanes Harvey and Maria and Irma all came through, and like Harvey devastated Houston, and Maria devastated Puerto Rico. And then Irma got Florida pretty good. And I think South Carolina, I can't remember exactly, but I think it did a little more damage. And I mean, it was just like, it was essentially from like August and through October, like it was just nonstop, like hurricane operations. But there's a lot of times, and it's the whole thing with flying that whenever you're not doing those, like you're training, you're reading, you're studying, it's a grind all the time with it. So.
Wow. What would you say your average hours per week were at those times?
I got my logbook somewhere. Like when oh my gosh, I don't even remember the times. Now I've been out of the cockpit for let's see, like 5 years. So it's
okay.
Getting hard to remember. I think like during those really busy weeks, it was like 40 or 60 or so, like in the air. That's way too much. We would do four 2 week long like sort of deployments down there, and we would get, I want to say like 40 out of that. So that would be per week. That might have been like 20 or something. I don't know. Like those were like heavier times.
Hectic times. Yeah. And I guess you have a base and they put you up in a hotel while you're down there and things like that.
We have this one spot in the Bahamas, Great Anagua. And there's no infrastructure there for us. So they built everything. They build these houses and we run a generator. And you actually have to pack all your own food and bring it down.
So, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So you tell people that it's hard to feel sympathy for telling people that you're going to deploy to the Bahamas. Everyone thinks you're going on vacation, but it was a little bit like, it was a little bit of a struggling trip. And then you battle giant mosquitoes the whole time you're there too. That's the other part of it.
That's the real enemy.
Yeah, it's the real enemy. Worst enemy I've ever faced, for sure.
I've been to the Bahamas. It's been a long time. I went as a kid. It was really a lot of fun. And
yeah,
we went to restaurants for dinner. So.
Yeah, no, we didn't have those.
It didn't sound like Bahamas. No, it sounds like a totally different experience. So thank you for your service. And I'm also, you're welcome. And I'm also so curious, after 11 years in the Coast Guard, what prompted you then to go from flying the helicopters to doing stand-up?
Yeah, stand-up was something I was always interested in. That was one of those things, like I remember as a kid, you know, like watching stand-ups, watching Comedy Central. That was the thing in my head. I was like, I would love to do that. Like, that would be the dream. But it was also one of those things I never told anybody, because I was like, that's crazy. You can't just do that. That's very silly. But I started, I had like very busy, like with flight school and everything. It was just a really busy time until like my mid-20s. They started to finally like calm down a little bit. And I started getting those pings again about like wanting to try it. So I finally tried it I think that was 2016, the first time I went up. And I just really liked it. And it sort of coincided with the me starting to get out of the Coast Guard. And so I knew like I would be getting out of the Coast Guard a few years from that point. And so I essentially just tried it as much as I could until I got out last summer. And by that point, I was like, well, I'm ready to give this thing a shot and see what I can do if I put all my energy into it. But yeah, I mean, to start, it was really just a curiosity and a passion. And I just kind of, you know, said, see where this takes me, basically.
Okay. So when you went out there for your first stand-up comedy performance, you just went up with off-the-cuff material? Did you have anything planned? Did you? What was that like? How'd it go?
Oh my gosh. my first time, I was in St. Petersburg, Florida. I just sort of looked up a nearby open mic, and I messaged the guy and said, "Can I get time on this?" And he said, "Yeah, sure, you can do 10 minutes." And I should have, yes, Don, you know, this should have been a big red flag for me. Nobody, for your first, you should probably do 2 minutes your first time.
Five.
At the most, five. And he was just like, you can do 10 minutes. I had no idea. I was like, okay, that sounds good. So I prepared vigorously. Like, I don't have a strong stage, or I didn't have a natural stage presence, you know? So yeah. I prepared vigorously, because I was like, I'm not going to, when I get on, I'm going to be nervous. I'm going to lose myself totally, whatever. But then I went to this place, and I'm almost positive it's closed down now. It was called, Kymatic Studios.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, not like a registered name. It's just what the guy called it. And it was like at this warehouse in St. Petersburg, and it was like the spring, and this place had no air conditioning, and there was like people living in the back of it. Five of us went on stage. It was just like, it was incredibly, it was a very unique experience. But yeah, no, that was my first time I did it. And I think it kind of what I hear about everybody's first time is like, you, it almost doesn't matter so much the result. It's more like as in terms of how many people are there or how many laughs you got. It's almost more like you did it, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And that's kind of what I felt. It's like, oh, I tried it and I think I would like to try this again. So that sort of set the pathway from there. Although when I was in Florida, I really didn't like, I only did it a few times after that until I moved to DC. So I don't know, take that Kymatic Studios experience either way. It was either a good start or a bad start. I'm not sure.
Jury's still out. For people that are unfamiliar with the craft, and that included me before I got into this haphazardly to face my fears of doing it. I remember that's what stood out to me the most when I took classes is the preparation that goes into mm-hmm. writing this material and doing this, going from a premise to a solid and great setup to a punchline that really lands. The comedians that are out there, you know, with the Netflix specials, the names we all know, it just all looked so easy to me. I just thought they just walked out there and just started talking to people with their funny selves and collected the paycheck, but it is not like that at all.
No, not even close. Not even close.
So ten minutes. Did you get the 10 minutes done?
Because I was so meticulous at that point. Not like meticulous as in it was good writing. It was just like I memorized 10 minutes of things. So I'm pretty sure. But I'm telling you, like, I was so, like, nervous and everything. Like, I don't think I could see past the microphone. And not to say, like, as a lighting issue. I'm just saying, like, my mind is so crazy. And, like, being on stage was such, like, a unnatural thing for me that I was just, like, you know, I don't remember hearing anything back or the words.
I don't know if anybody laughed.
I have no idea. I have no idea how it went. I was just like, I'm pretty sure. I was like, that's 10 minutes of things that I've said. And then I walked out. So.
Yeah. You went and did a bunch of open mics. Did you do the, to grow, but did you also do the, I think it's called the Armed Services. What's that called?
Armed Services Arts Partnership.
That's it.
Yeah. Okay. They're great. They have a stand-up class and I'll plug them. They will give it for free to veterans, veteran family members, and veteran caregivers. I did not do it because I had already started. And when I moved to an area where they were operating, when I moved to the DC area where they have a class, it was too full and they wanted people that had never done it before. I think now they let more in because they have more classes available. But I still got involved with them, like doing shows and stuff. And they put on some great shows. That was the first time I ever performed for like a legitimately sized audience of like more than 15 people was with them. And I went to one of their shows and they just let me on. And it was like in front of like 100 people. I was like, I cannot believe like they're letting me do this. And it was a great show and everyone was super friendly and stuff. So yeah, that's a great organization. And now they do all their stuff on, not all their stuff, but they have stuff online. So people can do it from wherever in the country if they do the online version.
Yes. And laughers, if you are related to the military or in the military, we'll be sure to put that link for you in the show notes as well, because I think that's a wonderful program. We've promoted it before. I think we talked about it when P.T. Bratton was on here. Uh-huh. Dwayne White was on here. So it's come up a few times. Guys. I love them too. My gosh, they're the best. They were the best. Now, how would you personally describe your style of comedy now that you've grown and evolved? And we're always growing and evolving. But today, how would you describe your style of comedy and what is your material about?
Hopefully funny. That's how I describe it.
My name's Noah Miller. I'm hopefully funny.
Yeah, hopefully funny. Hey, you're doing my act right now. No, I would say pretty observational. Pretty silly. I like to keep, sometimes I'll like touch on this or that. Like if you ever hear me talk about, I don't know, anything, a subject people hold dearly, and you hear me go into it, you tighten up or something, just know that it's going to be silly no matter what it is. That's my general thing. Like I don't go up and try to, I'm not like John Stewart. I'm trying to like, whatever. Nah, I'm not, like, that's all fine with me, but I keep it, light, silly. The stuff I talk about, I mean, I have a lot of stuff about the Coast Guard being able to do, in like that military nonprofit, like, I got to do a bunch of military shows. So you got to come prepared for that. You got to have stuff about, you got to be able to make fun of your service and all the other ones too. So I got stuff on that. My marriage, I've been married for a little over six years now. And that's interesting. We did a fiance visa. So that's a whole story there. Other stuff is, it's a lot of observation. Like anything that strikes me, I will write down and I will try. It doesn't mean it's always going to be funny, but I'll give it a shot. That's my philosophy for comedy.
That's great. I love that. Yeah, you are into the comedy. You are definitely going for it 100%. Yeah. I'm excited to see what unfolds for you. I love that you're also a comedy writer. And so you're doing TV half hour pilots and you write for film, write scripts, screenwriter. Do you have a preference? And what would you say is your strength as a writer?
TV for me, TV is like my comfort food for watching stuff. You know what I mean? It's like there's so many millions of TV shows. I don't know, not millions. There's so much TV available right now. I mean, it's insane the number of shows that are on TV, but like, I'll always go back to a sitcom. I'll always go back to The Office or Arrested Development or 30 Rock or, Brooklyn Nine, like all these. And it's just like, I've seen all the episodes, but they're so like, I love them so much that like, that's what I prefer more than anything. So, so TV comedies, and it's also nice to write in that form that, they're only about 30 to 40 pages. So that's nice as opposed to a film with like 120. I would much rather write a quarter of it. And the other part of that is where I'm at in writing. I'm a baby writer is what they call me, or a very novice. I'm just trying to get on the map anywhere. So you're just trying things, putting it out and seeing what happens. So it's much more economical if you can do that with like a shorter, not to say that it's easy to write, but like those TV pilots. And that's what's endearing to me. And then, the good part about it for me is that coming from a joke writing background is you can kind of punch up any script. Even if I suck at writing a story, it's like, all right, well, I'm at least going to have some good jokes here. Right, so that's the good part about this, which is useful.
Yeah, definitely. So that's your strength there. Was the Sunset Oaks a TV pilot, or is that a short feature? What is that?
That's a television pilot, like an original thing I wrote. It's basically about a wedding venue that's a bit underwater and their finances. And I don't, my jokes, or my strength is joke writing. The concept for that is a wedding venue, because my wife worked as a wedding planner. So I sort of have background for this. One I'm working on right now is about somebody who works in the Coast Guard. So I'm not very original. but the jokes is hopefully what comes out in this.
That's great. I've always wanted to be on a TV sitcom. Thought that'd always be so much fun. So if you're ever looking for, everybody's wine mom who's a little quirky, remember me.
There you go. There you go.
You remember
if
me.
If I ever get into it, yeah.
That's right. In the meantime, we'll keep doing our comedy and keep growing and moving.
Just trying to get somebody to notice us, right?
That's right. That's all we need.
Yeah.
That's all we need. Now, do you experience writer's block or find yourself getting stuck sometimes?
I think that's the stasis, like the normal operating mode is writer's block, right? Like the moments of inspiration are what's rare. You know what I mean? I find that a lot with joke writing where it's hard for me to like sit down and be like, all right, I'm going to make a joke about, you know, the deli today. I'm going to make some deli jokes. Whereas like a funny thought or thing I see will come up and I'll write it down. Like I got to develop this in a joke. That's where most of my material comes from. So if it's not like coming to me, it's like, if it's not being beamed to me from the universe and it's like, I don't know what to do. And that's something that's harder to control. It's a little bit easier to force with writing. Like you can sit down and like force yourself to like screenwriting. You can just kind of like, all right, I have to do a scene today or something like that. I think that's a little easier to force, but it's still like a lot of times until you have the idea of the direction it goes, it's like, I don't know. It's a hard thing to force for sure. I'm sure you deal with that too. It's just like trying to keep coming up with stuff.
Yeah. I love what you said there is this, it more just comes to you. And so then y'all take a note or whatever. I have found that to be where most of the comedy gold comes from, though I keep developing that writing discipline. And so that becomes a daily habit. But the most effective thing for me so far is having a notes folder on my phone and it says jokes. And then in a real, hilarious moment with my husband or a friend, or I make an observation because I think that's hilarious. It may not be fully fleshed out, but I'll just type some notes in there in the folder. Mm-hmm. And then when I sit down to write later, I'll go, oh yeah, I wanted to write about that. And then I start writing about it. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that happens all the time.
I'm almost the same in my process. Yeah, that's exactly how it works for me.
Yeah, that's how it works for me. So what are some things you do to refresh your mind when that block happens to stimulate creative ideas? What works for Noah Miller?
It's so funny, that whole concept, because you're like, oh, I'm going to trick my brain into thinking of new material. But the whole goal is to come up with new material. It's hard to ever get away from truly taking your mind off it. Like it's almost impossible. I don't know. Trying things, legitimately forgetting about the writing or whatever, sleeping sometimes, that helps for me. I'll take a vacation or something like that, and I won't have a goal to write during the vacation, but like I'll come back, I will have written nothing in a week or 2 weeks. And I'll come back, and then all of a sudden it just starts flowing again. And I think it's just like the recharge part of it. But yeah, genuinely trying to have experiences outside of writing is a good way to, I think, recharge and facilitate, more for yourself afterwards. But
you were making me laugh because in my head I was hearing, taking a nap works for me, going on vacation works for me. I was like, so basically doing nothing works for
doing
you. Doing nothing stimulates.
100%. 100%. If it's just like not coming, I don't know, the forcing yourself, it's like I don't, it, a lot of times you get very wary results. I like stepping away from it entirely if I'm like very blocked, basically.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Recharging is really great for all of us. We need to do a bit more of it. Is that hard to do in New York City? I mean, it's open 24/7, 365. So how do you recharge in New York City?
You never feel here like you're doing enough. I mean, like right now, there's it's whatever it is, like 10:30 or 11. I'm sure there's a mic I could be doing, and I'm not, you know.
Like, are you serious? During the day? For real?
Oh my gosh, they start. Yeah, there's ones in the day. Maybe not this early, but I know there's one that starts at noon. And it's like, oh, God. You know what I mean? So you're never doing enough here. Just trying to enjoy yourself. Because you hear like people that are successful at some point talk about like how they wish they would have been more in the moment, like earlier on. So if you can internalize that, like I am trying to enjoy like just the experience in New York while I'm up here as well, outside of comedy. But yeah, the city is, oh my gosh, it's a beast and it's crowded and everything. So a nice escape for me, especially because I came from the DC comedy scene, is I go back, you know, maybe, well, it depends, but maybe once a month or once every other month. And I have family that live around there still, so I can stay with them. And you get, they live in Maryland in the more rural part. So you get that more open experience or where you can walk more than 10 paces inside of a house. I'm very fortunate to be able to go and visit them and have that. It's a good spot to recharge. Yeah, sometimes you're just like, all right, I got to leave the city for a little bit. It's too crowded here.
It's too crowded. Do you, speaking of New York City, do you have any, you're a writer, you're a comedian, you're in New York City. So do you have any goals or aspirations to be on SNL, Saturday Night Live?
Oh my gosh. Who does it? I revere SNL, of course.
Yes.
I also know the likelihood of getting that, especially having just started here in New York. It's like I'm basically starting again from the bottom and working my way into this scene. And so, I mean, I'm not even getting, like, I'm on open mics. I'm paying to go on open mics right now. So the SNL thing, that's worlds away. Something would have to change very drastically for that to happen. So,
maybe this podcast, you know what I mean?
Yes, maybe this
SNL podcast. Come on, throw him a ball.
If Lauren is listening right now, would love to give me a call. But I won't be upset if that, it's not something that I'm like really hinging on, like, oh, it's gotta happen, you know? But yes, I revere it and that would be amazing.
That would be amazing. Yeah. We're going to get you out of the city here pretty soon.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, you're going to come to the Shenandoah Valley, which is a very different landscape for sure.
I'm excited.
What are you looking forward to the most about coming here to perform?
The space. the space. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. I, you know, I've lived in the region. You got the parks. I like to hike. I might do some of that. My family, as Donna was telling before, my brother lives in Charlestown, West Virginia. Not so close, but not too far either. Just getting out into a different area. I feel like I'm stressing it a lot, but yeah, just the nature, you know what I mean? Like I very much like being outdoors. So just getting a little bit outside the city, I'm looking forward to.
Yes. Well, we're looking forward to having you here. And I want to ask, as we wrap up, how best can people follow you on social media or otherwise to connect with Noah?
Sure. Yeah. I think I've got this handle across most platforms now. So hello, Noah Miller, no spaces. I think that's my handle on like Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and all those other things. Hello, Noah Miller, no spaces. And I post a lot of content on like Instagram and stuff like that. And you know, the comedian grind, you gotta be on every platform or whatever. So that's a good spot to follow me at.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Noah. This has been such a delight and super fun chatting with you today. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Dawn. I can't wait to perform down in Virginia.
Yes, laughers, you can see Noah perform live on Saturday, February 25th, as he helps us kick off the second season of the X2 comedy series at Court Square Theater in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Plus, you'll get to see four other comedians on this show, including yours truly, that's me, and Chris Womack, my husband. We are co-hosting the show. We will also have Adam Bush and headliner Joey ILO. We can't wait. So buy your tickets today at x2comedy.com. We'll be sure to put the link in the show notes for you as well. Season tickets are also available this year for the 6 show series throughout the year, featuring 6 different hilarious lineups. It's a great deal where you get 6 shows for the price of 4, available for purchase at x2comedy.com. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.